This is Movies, a podcast by the Active Cinema, and with me today, he owes over $8,000 in credit card debt. It is Hans.
You know how bad my life would be if I actually owed anything or anyone money already? Like, I already don't want to work doing what I do, but I just do it to, like, live paycheck by paycheck and just... Putting that thought in my head, because I did... Oh, I borrowed some money when I went to record in Boston, and I just paid like 40 bucks a month, and I just stopped paying that back in like August.
We did Angie and Jake's show, and at the end of the show you were like, hey guys, I'm not trying to make this weird or anything, but you know, I'm just really hungry tonight. I haven't been paid in 2 months. Could I borrow maybe like $300 from both of you? That was a very weird way to end that podcast.
They said no, too, so...
They did say
no. Humiliation. Yeah.
What the fuck? How the fuck are you supposed to send that from the UK? That makes no sense. What, yeah. Pounds? What are you supposed to do with pounds in Costa Rica? We got Wolfman back.
Hey, what's happening?
Thank you for agreeing to do this second half of our Warner Brothers in the 1980s special commemorative program this evening.
Absolutely. No, I love coming on. Anytime is good for me.
Wonderful. I mean, I think there's so much ground to cover. We talked about almost, I think maybe about 10 movies on the last show, and we still hardly scratched the surface of the enormity of what this company produced in such a memorable decade for entertainment. And we had left off on The Outsiders, the complete novel, the Francis Ford. Now, technically, that's maybe a 2006, 2007 DVD, Hans. You kind of cheated there. But that's okay. The movie did come out in the 80s. We left off on your selection of that film. And yeah, we still have a lot more to cover. Now, have either of you guys done any digging into the Warner Brothers archive in the time since we recorded that last show that maybe you have added to your list of films from this decade, or maybe just made any observations in general about the company and what they've produced? Because I wound up doing further digging into Warner Brothers, and I was like, okay, what happened with this company? Because they actually, I think I said on the last show that the 90s were not a good decade for Warner Brothers. I take that back. It was exclusively the late 90s that Warner Brothers did not seem to get it together. That's when they were making a lot of questionable decisions with greenlighting films that maybe should not have been greenlit. And they lost reasonable amounts of money within a short period of time. You saw in the early 90s movies like Batman Returns, and you know, you have some great films in that era, but when they do get to 97, it starts to fall apart, and that is when the plug is pulled on a lot of big productions that were in the middle of pre-production, like Superman Lives. And what I noticed decade by decade is that Warner Brothers took to producing more and more movies with every single decade, where if you look at the 1980s, they have a stack of about 10 movies, 15 movies max released per year. And I'd say at the very least, the median average, like the quality of these films, the median would be what you'd give like a 7 or a 6.5. There's a few duds in there, but on the whole, every year is producing like 3 or 4 pretty damn good movies. Then you get to 2010. 2010 is post Dark Knight, post Christopher Nolan, and they're producing something like 35, 40 movies a year. A quarter of them are Indian movies. Many of them are direct to DVD movies. And more than half of them are utterly forgettable that you haven't thought about since the year they were put out and maybe saw a commercial in passing on your television set. So it's kind of... representative, I think, of what has happened to the industry as a whole and why we all, not just this show, but every show that talks about movies, honestly, is like, well, why aren't things as good as they used to be? It's because expansion has killed that. Expansion has killed that at every level in different ways. And it is far less about honing in what are the 15, what are the 10 interesting, cool movies that are going to affect culture going to be, and more about, well, we can get away with having 37 shitty films as long as we have one Dark Knight in that mix. And this most recent year's Dark Knight has been Barbie.
You know, the Mayans predicted that the world would end in 2012, but I think that it actually ended in 2010, and we've all just been in hell since then.
I don't know. I enjoyed Spring Breakers in 2013. That was a pretty good year for me.
But that's part of it. That's the worst part of being in hell, Loraz, is that you don't know you're there.
Who is it who escaped from hell? Was it Virgil? Or is Virgil just...
No, Little Nicky.
Adam that's Sandler. Right, was, of course. How could I forget Little Nicky?
It was Dante.
Dante, that's yeah. Right. Okay, well, Hans, maybe you're the Dante who gets us out of hell. You ever think of that? Happy birthday, Hans, America's favorite movie star.
Yeah. It was yesterday.
Oh yeah, it's your birthday.
It was
yesterday. Yeah.
I'm 38. It's a very, very fun birthday where I just got drunk by myself and played Red Dead Redemption 2 on my PlayStation 5 and just pretended to be a cowboy for like 2 hours before
did
I fell
asleep.
Did
you wear a hat?
Yes. It's a very uncomfortable couch that I decided to fall asleep on instead of moving to my bed. And then I woke up at 2 a.m. with neck pain. So that was my... I'm an old man birthday, I guess. My mom was like, so what are you doing? Where are you going? And I was like, it's a Monday. I'm not, like, I haven't gone to a bar in, I don't know how long, 3-4 years. I was like, I'm just going to eat my sugar-free cookies and have a couple of beers and play.
How interesting. When we moved the show yesterday, because there was a birthday dinner you claimed to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I had dinner with my mother and my brother. That's it, because that's all the family that I have left over here. I told you, my girl has been in India for like a week, and it's...
Is she working for Warner Brothers?
No, I wish. No, she's just like the same job that we do. She's just over there for a month helping new Indian people that are going to take our jobs. Yeah, so it's just great. Great.
Well, I had a realization when you said, oh, I'm only turning 38. I was like, wow, for as often as we make fun of Hans for being old, Hans is not really old if he's only turning 38.
He's younger than me.
Well, I told you what happened with my girl, right? Which she, I want to say she made me believe, but she just mentioned it once. For a whole year, I thought I was 38 already, but I was 37. And it's just because one day she said, oh, yeah, you're 38. And I was like, oh, I guess I am 38. And then the entirety of last year, I was like, yeah, I'm 38 years old until I realized that I'm not.
No, Hans, a similar thing happened to me because I'm also 38. But when I turned 37, I just kind of started thinking of myself as almost 40. And then, yeah, right. For about half a year, I forgot. I was like, am I 37 or 38? And I kept having to do the math and like go to my birth date and count. But I'm 38, and I don't think I did shit for my birthday either.
Yeah. Now I feel like you get to an age, I think after 30, you're kind of like, it's just another day. That's fine.
Well, and it's another thing too. Like if friends or family wanted to do something, yeah, I think I went to dinner with my family. You know, if somebody wanted to do something for me, I would do it, but I'm not, as a 38-year-old man, I'm not going to call up all my pals and be like, hey guys, it's my birthday. What are we doing?
Yeah. Do you want to go get wasted and walk home? I'll be drunk by like 11 p.m. and then just want to fall asleep at the bar. Hey, you guys want to go through that? No, there's not a lot of, takers there. A lot of them have like families and shit. And it's just like, it's a fucking Monday. So I don't even bother. Yeah.
Did you get any good gifts from your brother and mother? Did you get a Warner Brothers ball cap or catalog?
This is a thing that has blown my girl's mind forever because she grew up in the States. And I don't know if it's like my family thing. We don't really make a big deal out of birthdays. So we never even got like each other presents. It was just kind of like, okay, cool. We'll get a cake today. And that was it. Like it was never a party. It was never, how many of my uncles or grandparents are coming to bring presents? Like it was always just kind of like, cool, we have cake and that's it. And the way that she has Americanized our Christmases and birthdays, it's like completely different from how we used to celebrate it over here. We would just be like, okay, cool. We'll have a dinner. We'll eat, we'll make food and that's it. As opposed to, well, now we have a tree and now there's stockings. I've never filled up a stocking until I was 37 last December. So it's just been a lot of, just Americanizing our holidays over here.
We could get into National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation on that note. I think that was your selection, right, Hans?
Yeah. that's on my list. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you should do a big Christmas. Everyone should, if they celebrate Christmas. Birthdays are a bigger thing with women, even here in the States. Because I know a lot of grown women who, yeah, like on any birthday, it's a big deal. Yeah. But yeah, for guys, it's 25, 30, 40. And then, yeah, just every 10 years until you retire or die. Those are the big
ones. Feel annoying. You know, I feel like as soon as I stop going to bars, I don't want to ask anyone to come over to my house, mostly because I just don't want to clean after them when they leave. So it's one of those things of like, do you want to go have a burger or something? Like, we'll celebrate my birthday.
Well, hold on. What are you doing at 38 where you have company over and you have to clean after them after they, who are you inviting over that messes your house?
Well, what I mean by clean after is like, there's going to be empty cans. There's going to be, I don't know, chairs.
Throw them in the trash.
Shit. Yeah.
They don't throw their empty cans in the trash?
Hold on a second. See, this sounds like a you problem. This just sounds like you don't want to go out, which is fine.
I don't. No. Every time I just go to a bar, I mean, a pub is fine because you can get food there. And if you're with friends, that's fine. But I can't imagine enjoying going to like flirt with someone or like going drinking at a club or a bar or whatever. I'm so
you're past
that.
You feel like that is very 20-year-old Hans when he was living in England.
What if we happened to be in the same city at the same time and we met up and just got a quiet drink between gentlemen? How would that be?
That sounds romantic.
It doesn't have to be romantic, you know. It would just be like,
between you guys, or
two grown, mature men getting a drink and being like, "Hey, I know you, and now we've met."
I can say when Hans came to the U.S., we definitely did go out to a couple different bars / restaurants. It wasn't exclusively where we're going out drinking sort of thing. That did happen a couple times, but for the most part, it was more like, "All right, we're tired. Let's go grab dinner," and then that's that. But most of the drinking was done at the B&B.
Hold on a minute. You guys are going out to restaurants and sharing an Airbnb, but a quiet drink, that's romantic.
Well, the way it was described sounded very romantic.
No, I was trying to sound, I was going for mature.
Yes. All right. Well, maybe if it was like a whiskey specifically, not too white
mature
wine.
Do shots?
No, I don't drink wine.
You know, when a couple of vodka shots in the dark, Wolfman, with me, and just stare at each other in low light.
I mean, if that's like a cultural thing, if that's big in Costa Rica, I don't want to disrespect you. You know, I'll
no,
do
the
cult, what you guys do. Yeah.
The cultural thing here is to like buy the cheapest alcohol you can get and just get destroyed.
And go
and
to
do
work.
Stupid shit.
Yeah.
Isn't it just go to the construction site drunk at 4:30 in the morning?
No one works at 4:30. That's an issue here, actually, because they refuse to pay anything extra or above what you get paid. So no one works before 9 a.m. on like construction shit or after like 6. So everything takes forever here. Because of that.
So they work 3 hours a day is what you're telling me. That's why Costa Rica is not as developed as America.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Blame them. Working construction sucks.
It's not very good. It's not a very good gig. But you know, we can't all live the life of Dudley Moore in Arthur, the 1981 Steve Gordon film starring Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli.
Don't you wish you were Arthur?
Would the more attractive of you please step forward?
It's gonna cost you $100.
Let's make it $200, but I will ask you to Simonize my car.
How rich are you?
I wish I had a dime for every dime I have.
Anticipating your condition, and I brought you orange juice, coffee, and aspirins, or do you need to throw up?
Kiss your wife like that?
I'm not married.
Keep smiling. 688-5549.
Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
For some reason, I was introduced to Arthur, and it's about, they did make a Russell Brand remake maybe about 10 years ago. And the whole gimmick of Arthur is he's an alcoholic. He's supposed to be 30 years old, but if you take a look at Dudley Moore in 1980, he's clearly like a 55-year-old man. And he'll inherit $750 million if he complies with his family's demands and marries the woman of their choosing. But he wants to marry Liza Minnelli, and they don't like her. She's, you know, low tier, trash.
I agree. Their view. Yep. Yeah, they're right.
So he's a drunk. There's a lot of inappropriate jokes in this movie that I probably should not have been exposed to when I was like 4 or 5 years old. But it is a very funny movie. I rewatched it recently. It holds up quite well. Dudley Moore is great. I would not recommend Arthur II on the Rocks, which came out later in the decade.
That's a great title, though.
Who does Russell Brand refuse to marry on the remake?
Is it Rose Byrne?
No, that was his ex-wife in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
That's who it is. Yeah.
But they changed so many aspects of that Arthur remake. Like, for example, because Russell Brand was sober or something at the time, he was like, I don't even want my character to be an alcoholic. I won't even do apple juice in the cup as a prop. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, all right, well, he's just a big boyish playboy man.
It's a playboy, according to IMDb. Greta Gerwig is the girl that he doesn't want to marry. Oh, no, Jennifer Gardner.
I believe it's Helen Mirren.
He's supposed to marry Helen Mirren? I mean, for how much money?
But he wants to marry Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah. Yeah, which one's the driest? That's the one he's in love with. Oh, no. Ah, Luis. This is like the equivalent of like dressing up as a woman, as a black man in film.
You see how excited they were about Dark Knight making so much money that they're just shoehorning Batman shit into everything. Like, this movie only came about because Dark Knight made $1 billion more than they expected. So there's all these movies would have never been considered or made otherwise, but Warner Brothers was like, yeah, fuck it. Why not? Let's do it. Let's give Jody Hill a full budget for Observe and Report, the mall cop movie, and put it out the same year as the other mall cop movie. Who cares? It doesn't matter. We have Dark Knight.
I did love Observe and Report, though.
It's excellent. Yeah. It's one of my favorite movies from that decade.
But... Well, listen, if Warner Brothers were still taking risks like that, where one of their movies makes a shitload of money and they will put that money into more interesting / silly, stupid movies like Observer Report, which I do enjoy. It's probably the best mall cop movie out there. I don't know how controversial that is. If they were doing that, I don't think we would be having this conversation about how the 80s Warner Brothers was better. You know, yeah, we just get a lot of mall cops.
I want a sequel about Dennis, Michael Pena's character, who fucks off down to Mexico after he robs the mall.
What was the Seth Rogen's character's? Ronnie? What Ronnie's up to with 2024 politics sensitivities? And
no.
Well, you know, it'd be a Trump allegory because his character would be Big MAGA guy.
Right. Well, they're doing something atrocious too, which I think, that might be, I don't remember. I don't think I wrote this movie on my list. I think Beetlejuice is a Warner Brothers movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So Beetlejuice, a great 80s movie, very early Tim Burton movie that has a lot of style and a lot of personality.
His second movie, in fact, if I remember right.
And it still holds up just because, just like his early movies, like I mentioned with the Scissorhands movie a couple of episodes ago, they all exist on like their own universe type of thing. So nothing ever feels out of time or out of place because it's never set on like a specific time, or at least it doesn't feel like that. But they're doing a Beetlejuice 2 this or next year, I think, with Michael Keaton. And that's
They just shot it, I think, in Connecticut. It wrapped filming, and they announced that the title was Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yeah, because they're thinking of a third one called Beetlejuice.
They must be. They must be if they're calling it Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Now, I'm not going to pretend that I'm not excited about just a crazy 70-year-old Beetlejuice just being inappropriate and like touching his penis and talking about women being like, come whatever,
Well, that would be that would be if we got that, then that would be fun. I actually I don't think it's going to be bad whatever we do wind up getting this year or next year when it comes out. It's not going to be Beetlejuice from 88. They're not bringing back Jeffrey Jones, but it is what it is.
I forgot about,
keeping with the theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just
that's right, Wolfman.
Just do what you did with a buddy, right? Just get a video of Jeffrey Jones in jail, just being like, "Oh,
I didn't do that with Buddy."
Can't, I mean, in the movie, it kind of looks like you did. So we could just pretend that you kind of did that.
What?
So in the movie, but
one of Buddy's characters is in prison. We just put him in a costume.
Prison. Right. No, you recorded through the prison.
I went to prison. System. I went to Rikers and recorded.
You went to Rikers. You recorded him. Exactly. Thank you. That's what I wanted to get into. Yeah, I'm not. I don't know how excited I am about that. I really like that '80s that '80s Beetlejuice. I've seen it recently, and again, I feel like his early movies are so creative and so out there and so different that what was out at the time that they still kind of hold up. And I'm very surprised by that. They have a lot of like weird humor and a lot of like things that modern day sensitivities might not look great upon. But that's the thing. When it comes to that 80s Beetlejuice movie, a lot has to do with the performance and how outrageous the character is. Not really excited about 2024 if it comes out this year. Sensibilities applied to that character, because then it would just be not it might just be cartoon Beetlejuice, you know, but it's not going to be the 80s Beetlejuice that everyone enjoyed.
No. What was the last movie that Tim Burton directed? Was it like that movie with Eva Green with the weird eyes or whatever?
He did a like an orphanage film
with
Sam Jackson. I don't think it was that one. I think that was a while ago. I think he did one since then. Maybe it was a Disney remake. Dumbo was 2017 or 2018.
Oh, he did Dumbo?
Yeah, he did the remake of Dumbo. And honestly, it was not that bad. I wound up having to rent it because my girlfriend wanted to watch it. And I was like, all right, I like Tim Burton. Michael Keaton's in this. They're working together. I can't really say no. And Danny DeVito was in there too. It was fine, you know?
Yeah, I remember liking Big Fish well enough when it came out. I didn't love it. I would probably hate it now if I watched it again. But I was like, at the time, I was a big Tim Burton fan, big Ewan McGregor fan, so I wanted to like it. Mm-hmm. But with the exception of that, yeah, there's this clear break, probably like after Sleepy Hollow, probably about when he made The Corpse Bride, where he stopped being Tim Burton and became Hot Topic Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
And there's like this complete break where his movies look like a birthday cake from all goths. They all have that, like, it's just very like shitty claymation, just stupid look to them. It's infuriating just thinking about it. I'm like thinking of all the stupid hats and weird hair that they gave Johnny Depp. And
I think when he stopped using his own shit, it kind of turned to, because you have Ed Wood, which still feels like a very Tim Burton-y, like, who's going to make a fucking movie about Ed Wood other than, you know, a weirdo in 1994. Then you have Mars Attacks, which I really like, but not because it's Tim Burton-y. I just like, because I like that concept of just little Martians attacking humans. That's fine. Then you have Sleepy Hollow, which is, I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember enjoying it. After
I like
that, yeah, after that you have Planet of the Apes, which is a big franchise from the 70s, 80s. Did it start in the 70s? I'm not sure.
60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
It's like, like 5-6 movies. And that was, I haven't seen it since it came out in theaters, because I did go to the theater to see that. And I wasn't a huge fan of it. Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I'm not sure. I mean, the reviews are not great. which is usually not.
It looks better than any of the Planet of the Apes that have been released in the last 15 years. I mean, they got rid of, I think with this new one that they have coming out, even though it was intended to be a trilogy, they just were like, yeah, I mean, no, let's do another one. We'll put it on Hulu. We don't even have to have any live action people in it this time. Let's just have it be all apes and we'll get voice actors. It'll be the cheapest movie ever made for Hulu.
Yeah, and that's the thing I wonder, because I remember when I saw this remake, I was not familiar with the original ones. And then when I was in film school, I was like, I'll just watch all of them back to back. Fine, a couple of them are fine. They're not like the greatest movies or whatever. I don't care about these remakes that they're doing. So I'm wondering if maybe going back to the 2001 Mark Wahlberg movie that everyone seems to shit on might not be as bad. But I think that's probably where the decline on his Tim Burton-y stuff fell off, because then you have Big Fish after that, which is still like a Tim Burton movie, I guess.
Well, he went over to Disney right after that. That was the big thing. Well, he started at Disney. He started in the animation department, and then he went over to Warner Brothers, and they gave him a deal where he did several movies in a row. And I think around the time that they nudged him out of the Batman franchise and gave him Mars Attacks as a parting gift, he was like, all right, I need to find a new home. And it wasn't long before he wound up back at the Mouse.
Which would be what? Alice?
Technically, Big Fish, I believe, was a Weinstein film, and Miramax was owned by Buena Vista at the time, and Buena Vista owned Disney. But he did do a couple of Warner Brothers films after that. There was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Corpse Bride. I don't remember if Sweeney Todd was that. He actually did ping pong a bit here and there, because up until, I want to say, like Dark Shadows, because Dark Shadows was a Warner Brothers film also, but it was mainly Disney releases with Frankenweenie, Alice in Wonderland, Big Eyes, Dumbo. And then Wednesday is the TV show he's been doing that was a big hit on Netflix. So,
Netflix got him.
Netflix has him. Well, I guess right now at the moment, Warner is still working with him. It's a shame that this Flash movie was not a hit, because I think if it had been a hit, not only do we get those unreleased Michael Keaton Batman movies that they shot, but we're probably maybe getting some incarnation of Tim Burton's Superman Lives.
So I know that I still haven't seen The Flash. I want to, though. You made me want to see it. Like, you guys made it sound decent.
Oh, no. We're sorry. But I'm sure it doesn't.
Like even though that movie bombed, I feel like if this Beetlejuice movie is a hit, or if Michael Keaton gets another hit under his belt, I feel like they might go that route anyway. Because everybody loves... If they're going to bring back an old Batman, he's the only one that's going to put asses in the seats.
Well, it didn't work this last time with The Flash, apparently.
But that's because it was...
James Gunn has, for whatever reason, he has something against the Burton Batman and Michael Keaton as Batman. And he said, oh, no, he's great in the movie. But it was a top-down order from him. Wolfman, do you mind if I spoil something in The Flash for you?
I think the whole thing's been spoiled, so go for it.
Okay. All right. Well, he dies.
No,
he
I
dies
know that.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, originally it was supposed to be, Ezra Miller's Flash goes back in time to save his dad, and then he does that, and then Michael Keaton Batman is alive. Mm-hmm. And now he's the new Batman. He's taking Ben Affleck's place. That's not how it ends. Mm-hmm. He stays dead now, and they do a cutaway gag. It's the George Clooney Batman, who's the Batman of the Ezra Miller Flash universe.
Yes. So, but two things. One, since the Ezra Miller universe is over, it doesn't matter. And B, since it's a multiverse anyway, who gives a shit? There's a million other realities where Michael Keaton Batman's still alive.
And then with that logic,
yeah.
Yes, but James Gunn gives a shit, and James Gunn does not like that Batman. So they had the Batgirl movie.
Fuck himself. You heard it here.
And he made an argument. He was like, no, Michael Keaton's so great in the movie, but they cut down his scenes aside from that ending as well, per James Gunn's top down order to fit like with his new idea of what he wants to do with those DC movies. they had the Batgirl movie, which was basically done, and he was the Batman of that. And I've heard that that was not that bad, the Batgirl movie. It was just kind of whatever, you know? And they were planning the Batman Beyond movie that would have had Michael Keaton's Batman in
That's the only one I would really want, because as much as I'm kind of like a, I'm not meaning to stump for this, because I don't want to see 70-year-old Michael Keaton running around like Batman and just get the fucking Indiana Jones treatment. But if they're going to have old Batman, like old man Bruce Wayne as a mentor, get Keaton. There's no reason not to.
It's kind of awkward, because I feel like the 80s Batman, whenever you see him fighting, it's not the most impressive, fight coordination or fight, whatever. It's always very, what am I trying to say here? I guess he's like a little guy, right?
Michael Keaton's not a big guy.
Yeah.
Right. He's five six, something like that.
So whenever you see him fighting, you have to shoot it in a way where it looks impressive, right? So after seeing the Batman vs Superman, where Batman is such a big guy, and then back to this, I would love to see Michael Keaton as like a Batman Beyond Batman, where he's moved past, I'm still badass, I can still kick ass in the suit. Because whenever I would see him in the suit in this Flash movie, I was just kind of like, oh man. It was just kind of like, don't go fight. It's you just stay over here. Just stay on your,
Well, the problem with that was, here's the thing with the Michael Keaton in the Flash movie when he's fighting, is it's so obvious that it's not, I mean, to me anyway, it was very obvious it was not Michael Keaton, because he's the most agile and physically combative he's ever been in the three movies that he's in at age 77 or whatever fucking age he is in this movie.
They gave him the John McClane treatment, where at a certain point he becomes superhuman as he ages, which is antithetical to the whole fucking Die Hard franchise.
Right.
But it's like, oh, now that he's old, he's 10 times the better fighter than he ever was. Yeah, retarded.
Well, that kind of makes sense with Bruce Willis now, right? That his brain is so fucked up that nothing hurts, so he can just go fight anyone, and it's just,
he's got the retard energy, retard strength now.
It's got that, you know, that Homer Simpson is a boxer thing, but he's just retarded enough for it to not hurt.
I don't remember what episode of The Simpsons is Homer Simpson up. It doesn't matter. That's Fox. We're talking about Warner Brothers here. So Hans, you're
Mike Tyson episode.
Yeah.
The one Mike Tyson episode where he gets beaten up by.
No, I stopped watching after like 1996 or something.
That's like 94 or something.
You're referencing like season 51 that came out in 2006.
Yeah, non-binary Mike Tyson beats up Homer. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm getting.
Well, what did you want to say about Beetlejuice? You hardly even spoke about Beetlejuice.
That was just on the list, because I didn't prepare for episode 2 at all, like you made us admit at the beginning of this episode.
I didn't prepare. I just didn't look into the inner workings of Warner Brothers.
Okay, well, let me tell you, I didn't prepare.
Don't paint me with your brush, Hans.
Listen, Wolfman, I didn't prepare for this. So I saw Beetlejuice was on the list, and I was like, how many of these movies have I actually seen that I remember enough to talk about? Beetlejuice, it's great fun still.
Who's your favorite Beetlejuice character?
Jeffrey, what's his name?
Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones is just... He was going to marry a weird ginger pedophile in the 90s. No one. Yeah. He still dances. He still does a little...
Adam and Barbara are ghosts.
What's the good of being a ghost if you can't frighten people away?
Their house is being haunted by the living.
Maybe the house could use a little remodeling.
And they can't scare them into leaving.
They're dead. It's a little late to be neurotic.
So they're calling on Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice!
Who's no ordinary ghost.
Yeah! You don't want his help.
Can you be scary?
What do you think of this?
Now, the party's over.
You put somebody out of the house, I want to get somebody out of your house.
But the fun has just begun.
It's showtime.
Do you know anything about the history of Beetlejuice? The production history.
Not really, no. I just know that.
Well, did you know that Beetlejuice started as a film about a demon, and the demon was a little Arab man, and they emphasized him marrying a 12-year-old girl much more as the plot.
Oh, that, how would he pronounce Beetlejuice? You want to give it a try there?
I don't do Indian impressions.
Was it Indian or Arab?
I think he it might have been Arab. Might have been Arab, actually.
Arab's going to be more throaty.
Just angrier. I don't even know why.
He was supposed to have bat wings and tons of other stuff as well. So that was the original Beetlejuice.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. I thought he might have just been based on a children's book or something.
Based on a children's book? He tries to marry a child.
I mean, we're talking about 1980.
Eight?
Seven?
Listen, nope. They're hiring Jeffrey Jones. You know, it's clearly...
Yeah. I do have a theory about Tim Burton being associated with so many people who have been accused of and, arrested for sex crimes related to minors. So,
what's the theory?
Well, I don't think this is an appropriate space to get into that, especially with you noting that there's been a theme over many of these episodes here. Would either of you have gone to see Kevin Smith's Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian?
Not under threat of death.
This was the sequel to Beetlejuice that was planned for the early 90s and was supposed to be written or directed by Kevin Smith, and he turned it down.
So is this like based on that 60s Batman episode where he would wear shorts and
the surf competition against the Joker?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Cause that sounds kind of like that, kind of like a, why?
What they have. Yeah. It has as much in common with it as The Descendants, the Alexander Payne, George Clooney movie that also takes place in Hawaii.
Well, no, because, you know, Beetlejuice will be wearing shorts, and Batman wears shorts in that episode, so there's that connection there. That's how my brain works. This is a nightmare that my brain is.
I think you've had a drink too many shows now, and it's starting to take a toll on your cognitive skills.
That's the saddest part that anyone acknowledged. All right.
Since we're doing more, I had two. I'm going to jump around and pick a different one. Okay, I could talk this. This is probably not going to be... We'll see how you guys react to this. 1984, Never Ending Story.
What is the secret of this enchanted book? What wonders are hidden within its pages? What magical spell does it cast on all who read it? What is the secret of the Never Ending Story?
But that's impossible!
Enter a world where a young boy's imagination becomes a vivid reality. The world of Atreyu and Artax, the Rockbiter, and the good and kind gnome. A world that is vast and eternal, treacherous and dazzling, unforgettable and free. For anyone who's ever made a wish, believed in a fantasy, had a dream. This is the Never-Ending Story.
I hated that movie as a kid. I found it so boring. And then watching that, his horse drowns in the swamp, that was depressing. And then I revisited it because Wolfgang Peterson died, I think, last year, or maybe it was the year before. And I decided to rewatch it. And I was just very impressed with the fantastical scope and nonsense of it. Mm-hmm. So the Neverending Story is a very nice selection on your part.
I appreciate those things as well. I know in this day and age, particularly after that god awful moment in Stranger Things, Neverending Story has just been kind of lumped into the like pile of nostalgia shit that Reddit millennials are fucking gaga for. But it's actually a well-made movie. And I revisited it as an adult because I liked it a fair amount as a kid. But it, even as a kid, I was like, this is heavy. I don't want to just put this on any old time. Revisiting it as an adult, the very hard but very honest lessons that that movie tries to teach children, it is stunning how ballsy it is, and I can't believe anyone greenlit it. Yeah, the horse drowning in the swamp, the lesson, the whole lesson of that scene is if you give in to sadness, it can kill you. Which it's funny that the generation that loves that movie so much has the highest rate of antidepressant use. They clearly didn't take that to heart. The scene where those weird little dwarf people that have the luck dragon, they're healing him with his wounds. And the old lady is like, you know, she puts the stuff on him and it stings. And she says, it has to hurt to heal. That's life. It has to hurt to heal. The moment where he's got to look in those mirrors and see his true self. And then the old guy tells him that many men run away screaming. And what's the big enemy? The big enemy of everything. Nothing. Nothingness. Void. That is the ultimate enemy.
Jesus Christ, Wolfman. I thought it was just a movie about a little Indian boy that had a big dog that he could ride. And
no,
that's it. Like, I don't remember.
There's not an Indian. There's not an Indian.
There's not an Indian boy to be found in that film.
Part of what makes it great.
What's the main character?
No, you're right. It's Mowgli. It's Mowgli and Simba is his dog.
Atreyu. Well, isn't Atreyu like a Native American? Or who am I thinking of? Who?
Isn't that a pop-punk band from 2006?
You meant Indian. You said Indian. Yeah. I was still thinking of the Beetlejuice movie that never was.
Not this one. This one. Yeah, like a little native boy.
He's native coded. They make him native in the second one. He's like brown skinned. He's definitely more native.
I thought Jonathan Brandis was the boy in the second one.
He's Sebastian. He's the boy reading the book. Atreyu the hero is a different kid. But the movie deals with such like heavy themes, and a lot of people think that it's too much for kids, but you look at, and I'm just gonna sound like a fucking boomer right now, but you just look at how coddled everyone is, and look at how grown adults shriek at the first sign of any kind of tension or friction, or if they hear or see anything that makes them uncomfortable. They clearly did not listen to the never-ending story. Like, that movie tells kids some hard universal truths, and that you have to face life with courage and with a full heart.
I love that this type of movie was what was prominent in the 80s and 90s for children. They did not shy away, as what you're saying here, they didn't shy away from darkness. They didn't shy away from having to tell harsh truths to children. Whereas nowadays, you would never find that in any child's film. You hardly see it in adult movies. And I think back to Prey, which is the common reference here. Is the dog not only survives the predator attack in Prey, but he stops the predator. And that is just how spoiled the adult audience is, that they cannot deal with an animal's death. And in this movie, for children, for five-year-olds, for six-year-olds, a horse drowns in a swamp, and that's life.
And you see it.
You watch it drown. They killed four fucking horses that day to get the best shot available.
Well, you not only watch
But Michael Cimino can't get work.
Yeah, you see the kid's agony at not being able to help his horse dying, too. It's not just the horse drowning. It's like, yeah, you're a little Indian child. What are you going to do? Pull him out by, I don't know, doing a little dance, a rain dance or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's the frustration of the thing you love.
I think
love
you're getting this movie mixed up with the Indian in the cupboard in your head, Hans.
I think I'm getting like four or five different movies confused with it. Never.
Yeah, this is like Man of the House with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Chevy Chase.
But it's like, go on.
Oh, no, but please go, Hans.
Well, no, because I lost my thought.
Oh, God damn it. I did it again.
You let do?
I get excited. I interrupt. I had two cups of coffee like while we were fucking around before we started recording.
You're fine.
But yeah, like he loses the horse, but then because he presses on and he doesn't give up, he meets a new friend. He gets the luck dragon, Falcor, like a new friend, a new companion. And it's, you know, like tragedy strikes and we all suffer loss, but life goes on and it has to go on. You have to go on with it.
Yeah, they teach you lessons on kids' movies. Isn't that a weird concept? Right.
Yeah. Now it's just some boned up animator going, I wonder how fat I can make this woman's ass before anyone notices, before they turn it into a meme.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone's going to notice that this character looks exactly like me and I'm completely obsessed with this fictional character.
Didn't they catch the Powerpuff Girl animator? Or maybe it was one of the comic book guys. He decided she was going to have a boyfriend and it was exactly like him. The image was exactly like himself.
Yeah.
It's all just a way for them to create more content for the kind of porn that Vosh is going to like.
Just to bring it back to Vosh, who I completely forgot existed and was a human being. All right. Never-ending story. I would say that people should go back to that one if they're just in the mood for a big epic fantasy film. Like the type of movie that isn't often made without heavy amounts of computer-generated effects. What the Never-ending story does is quite magnificent and enjoyable to watch, whether it's a children's film or not. So I definitely co-sign that recommendation. My pick.
Well, before you move on.
Yes.
They also go all out with it, which is not something that you see studios being brave enough to do anymore. Because I feel like movies like A Never-Ending Story, like, okay, so it's based on this already established idea, or I think it's books, right? So at that time, they would just try to portray the book idea into a theater without thinking, well, this character might be insensitive towards this person, or maybe we need to change this line, or we need to change this other thing, which is what I think happens a lot in modern day. So maybe one of the reasons why this movie still works so well and still holds up is because they were willing to be brave enough and not just try to be sensitive towards things, and instead just like, well, this is like Wolfman said, it's a kid's movie that shows you how life is, and you just push forward and get through it, and that's it. As opposed to now, where everything is just very safe and very like, oh, how are you? Are you feeling okay today? How are you feeling emotional before I ask you this question? Or you know what I mean? Like all of that shit was not even the thing that they would consider before putting their movie out, which makes movies better, I think.
Agreed. Yes. On a more adult end of fantasy, my selection is Creepshow.
Coming soon. Jolting tales of horror. Creepshow. From the author of Carrie, The Shining, and Cujo. And the creator of Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, you'll scream at ghastly ghouls, cringe at weird kids, and shiver at the doings of evil doctors.
This is going to be extremely painful, Mr. Verrill.
Creepshow will grab you, grow on you, and give you the creeps.
Now, this is going to be an entirely new experience.
Creepshow, the most fun you'll ever have being scared.
Creepshow is directed by George A. Romero, and it was a collaboration between him and Stephen King based off of the old Creepshow comic books from the 1940s, 50s, 60s. And it is such a treat. You know, I've been recently getting into, I've been looking up episodes of Tales from the Crypt on archive.org. And this feels like the proper predecessor to that. There is a Tales from the Crypt movie from the 1970s, but I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think that's very good and doesn't quite capture the mischievous vibe of that HBO series like Creepshow does. I think all of the shorts in the Creepshow film are pretty solid for an anthology movie as well. And the ending with the roach-infested high-rise apartment in New York just preyed upon my worst fears as a child, going to school in Boston with a swimming pool in the basement and a school full of cockroaches that would just be asleep on their backs in the hallways. You kick them around like hockey pucks sometimes, you know.
Holy shit.
It was quite a time. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting visual effects in Creepshow. I actually borrowed one or two for Mass State Lottery where I tried to recreate them. You get some fun performances here from Leslie Nielsen, Ted Danson, Tom Atkins, Tom Savini's in the movie. You know, it's a pretty stacked cast. Hal Holbrook, of course. So
Adrian Barbeau.
That, of course. Yeah. So it is a, and Stephen King. Stephen King might be the most memorable character in the entire movie. I think his character name is like Gordy or something, which is a very Stephen King character name. And he just grows moss and mold all over his body after coming in contact with a comet. So Creepshow is my pick.
Creepshow's great. I remember watching that a lot growing up. And anthology movies, I think, are so hard to pull off. Creepshow's the first one is one of the few decent ones. Like you said, each story is good. I have, I always loved that first one with Leslie Nielsen, because when I first saw it, Leslie Nielsen, he was just Frank Drebin to me. So seeing him play a villain was like frightening. It was extra frightening to me. To see Ted Danson get it, because he was one of the three men and Three Men and a Baby. That's what I knew him from. So it was just like seeing this dark side of these two kind of like these two guys that I'd kind of seen in other movies as a kid in this lighter fare. And then of course I have affinity for the monster in the box, that one, that big fucking creature in that crate under the stairs. I really love that one.
Have either of you seen the Creepshow sequels or series that has come since this movie was released?
No.
Creepshow 2, Hans, your microphone's dead right now. Creepshow 2, I think, is okay. There's one segment in there called The Raft that is particularly good. And then Creepshow 3, I've never seen that. That was directed DVD. Didn't have anyone who was involved in the first two involved in that one. It's kind of in the same bracket as something like Hostel 3, where it's like some company bought the name and did their own cheap-looking, horrible sequel. And then Shudder did Creepshow as a series, and people will rave about that. I think it's not very good. I've never seen a good episode of that show. It's always very cheap and kind of Portland soy horror, in my opinion.
I heard about that one. I heard that, didn't they have a werewolf episode?
They probably did. It's, you know, it's the Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone set up for that show, where every episode is something new.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference? What's the difference between Little Shop of Horrors and Creepshow? I've never seen either of them, so I don't know.
Little Shop of Horrors is a narrative movie that is also a musical, so it's quite different.
Okay, I've never seen either of them.
Continue,
I feel like I confused them with
which
one is which.
You've never seen Creepshow?
No.
Wow, I really would have thought that would have been probably on your list, if anything. That's quite surprising. Creepshow is a pretty big staple, I think, for 80s horror.
No, I would say so.
Yeah. I've never gotten around to it. I don't know.
Head on over to patreon.com/lowres and sign up in the $5 tier so you can get all the exclusive episodes you're never going to find in video form anywhere but patreon.com/lowres. And we do have the $100 tier, which allows you, you just want to sign up for 1 month, you don't have to do it every single month. That would be kind of ridiculous. That'd be insane. You know, I wouldn't expect that from anyone except someone in like the 1%. $100, you will select a movie we will discuss on the show. and we will dedicate a full episode to that film of your choosing. We'll talk about it at length, analyze it, review it, and we'll give you a shout out as well. Head on over to patreon.com/lowres and join today.
Cancel.